All right, the time is 2 minutes in the office o'clock, and a very good morning to you, our listeners tuning in to Eagle FM, whether through our website or perhaps the app. So we really appreciate you for your daily support. Like, today is Wednesday, the 28th May 2025, and I'm your host, Lois Ashim. I'm here to provide you with insightful updates on economics, entrepreneurship, and of course trade policies until the hour of 7:30. Now, before diving into the latest economic development across Africa, please be sure to connect with us on our social media platform, Eagle FM Media House, that is on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. As also, you can also connect with us on the Village Newspaper page on Facebook, that's Facebook, Instagram, and of course WhatsApp. Please don't forget also the WhatsApp channel, just to subscribe, and that is now Eagle FM Media House. Please do subscribe just to catch up also on the daily news update and of course the newspaper alerts. And please do not forget to download the app, Eagle FM app, that is available on Google Play Store and the App Store, and to stay informed. And wherever you are, wherever you go, you can able to listen through the app. Now, to start internationally, is that the British Oil and Gas Company Shell is close to selling its South African downstream properties as local interest for its assets. Now, including 600 fuel stations and transportation network mounts. Now, the sale comes as Shell shift focus globally following the closure of its major South African refinery.
Being mum on a possible deal to buy Shell's downstream assets in South Africa, the country's Central Energy Fund has confirmed it's thrown its name in the hat as a possible bidder.
We have indicated to Shell, by the way, that we do have an interest, but of course they do have a process that they run, in terms of who is going to ultimately be the winning buyer. So we have initially participated in the process, and we do have an interest in really playing a big part in the downstream business. But how it pans out ultimately, we have to wait and see.
The oil giant pulled the plug on its South African operation after 60 years as it focuses on higher returns elsewhere. It has been looking to offload $1 billion assets, which include almost 600 fuel stations and transport businesses, which could also entice local enterprises.
I believe that there is a distinct opportunity for small and medium-sized groups in South Africa itself. It presents an opportunity, and you're talking about empowerment. Here's an opportunity to develop black-owned industries that operate more efficiently and can fill in that gap.
Refining capacity also took a knock when Shell shut down South Africa's biggest refinery in 2022. SAPREF was jointly run with BP and eventually sold to the Central Energy Fund for a few US cents.
We really have big plans for that refinery. One of the things that we would like to do is to actually make it bigger. We actually want to reinstate it, but at a bigger, something like 600,000 barrels per day instead of the 150,000 barrels per day.
Only two of South Africa's six refineries still operate, putting the country at the mercy of global markets with its heavy reliance on imported fuel.
In 2010, 80% of our product actually came from South Africa, because we refined and we got our finished products from our refineries. But if you look at it now, we actually have a very big deficit in that we import about 80% of the product.
You have to have a lot of expertise to operate refining ventures in South Africa. And that's been one of the tragedies and one of the areas of decline in South Africa's industrial framework over the last decade. That is very sad to have seen. And one can only hope that we somehow manage to fill that capacity in due course. And that is where you could get foreign multinationals coming in to assist.
There has been no disruptions to Shell's operations since the company announced its exit.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on into the Ungata. Ungata is advancing toward energy independence with the Lake Abbott oil project set to produce its own liquefied petroleum gas, that is BG. Our expert highlights this as a pivotal step toward cleaner energy for households, reducing the nation's reliance on wood fuel and fostering sustainable development.
So LPG is a type of hydrocarbon gas that is obtained by refining crude oil or processing natural gas. Its development in Uganda is being widely seen as a major boost for the country's oil and gas industry. The Ministry of Energy says production in the refinery and pipeline are more than 60% complete, and oil production will begin by June of next year. The East African country imports most of its LPG, but expects that to stop in the coming years. Not only that, Uganda also hopes to become a regional LPG exporter when oil production picks up further.
From Kingfisher, we'll have about, at peak, about 20,000 tons per year. And then in Tilenga, it will be about 80,000 tons. And remember, our consumption is just about 35,000 tons per year at the moment, going 40,000, okay, we will see. So if it was to be produced right now, we would be having excess LPG, and we'd definitely export to the neighboring countries.
The surge in local gas output is expected to cut prices and more than double domestic use, ending reliance from China, India and the UAE, making the switch to clean energy smoother.
All right, there you had it. The time is 9 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now to move on to Kenya, is that the Kenya plans to divest additional shares in telecom giant Safaricom to raise $1.16 billion to partly finance the 2025 to 2026 budget. Now holding a 35% stake, now the government aims to boost its coffers through strategic stake sales in the state-owned enterprises.
Let's start in East Africa. Kenya's government could potentially offload more of its stake in the telecom service provider Safaricom. The government is looking to raise at least $1.2 billion in the 2025-2026 fiscal year through the sale of stakes in companies it has a share in. The government currently owns 35% of the operator after it sold a 25% stake in it through an initial public offering in 2008. The South African grocery group Pick n Pay has recorded a narrower full-year loss before tax, reflecting a lower trading loss in its core supermarket business. Losses before taxes and capital items came in at 13.3 million in the 52 weeks ending on the 2nd of March, compared to a loss of $78 million the prior year. The full-year trading loss in its core Pick n Pay business narrowed by $56 million. Now, overall group turnover was up by nearly 6% to $6.64 billion, buoyed by 13.2% growth in the discount grocery chain Boxer and a 1.9% growth from its Pick n Pay business. The group further adds that it anticipates the Pick n Pay core business to break even on a trading profit for lease interest basis in the fiscal year 2028. Vivo Energy's revenues in Kenya declined for a second consecutive year, even as fuel demand picked up. Now, the company reported revenues of $1.47 billion for the year ending in December 2024, marking an $84 million decline compared to the $1.55 billion it posted in 2023. Despite a 7.3% increase in national fuel consumption in the last half of 2024, Vivo Energy saw its market share slip to 21.34% compared to 22.07%. The company attributes that revenue decline to a mix of factors, including fuel price volatility, efficiency gains from combustion engines, and a gradual shift among commercial clients towards alternative energy sources. And finally, Volvo will cut around 3,000 mostly white-collar jobs as part of a broader restructuring plan announced last month. This comes as the carmaker is adjusting to higher costs, a slowdown in electric vehicle demand around the planet, but also much greater uncertainty around trade conditions. The layoffs represent around 15% of the company's office staff, with close to three-quarters of those job losses expected to occur in Sweden and the remainder in the company's operations around the world.
Right, there you had it. Now to move on to the next item is that African nations are intensifying efforts to process their raw materials to drive industrial growth and competitiveness. Now the Africa's Raw Materials Summit in Abuja, Nigeria, leaders endorsed a target to increase local value addition by 30%, aiming to curb raw materials exports and boost intra-African trade under the African Continental Free Trade Area.
30% of the world's strategic raw materials, from cobalt and lithium to cocoa and rare earths. But most are exported without processing, costing the continent jobs and revenue. The 2025 African Raw Materials Summit drew over 1,000 delegates from 75 countries. Policymakers, investors and experts focused on solutions.
This summit is our moment where Africa reclaims its narrative, redefines its destiny, and rededicates itself to transforming raw wealth into real wealth from the soil beneath our feet through the genius within our people.
Nigeria is leading with a draft law mandating 30% local processing before exports. Officials say it aligns with ECOWAS and AFCFTA's rules and could shift Africa's resource model.
We've got enormous potentials as a people and as a continent, but to what purpose are we putting those potentials in?
The value loss is clear. Ghana supplies nearly half the world's cocoa, but earns under 2% from chocolate sales. In Congo, most cobalt is mined locally, but refined abroad. Experts say fixing this needs investment in tech, logistics, and infrastructure.
It is significant
to emphasize the value addition is not optional. It is essential. It is the engine of youth empowerment, SME growth, and economic sovereignty.
For Nigeria to be able to harness its raw wealth sitting on the ground, there's a fair amount of work that needs to be done in putting in place the right legal and regulatory framework.
Delegates also highlighted digital tools like Nigeria's raw material mapping system to guide investments and track supply chains. For many, the summit marks a shift from extraction to transformation. With strong.
All right, there you have it. The time is 15 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that the U.S. is facing backlash for allegedly pressuring African governments to favor American business interests. Now, critics cited aid cuts and diplomatic threats, especially against countries like South Africa, that delay licensing, arguing it poses at a risk of sovereignty and development. We might take a listen.
The Trump administration has been aggressively advancing some business interests of Elon Musk, the world's richest man, according to an independent news organization, ProPublica. The organization says the U.S. State Department has on a number of occasions stepped in on behalf of Starlink, a satellite internet company owned by Musk in several African countries. According to Starlink, the satellite provider is now operating in 18 out of 54 African countries, including Nigeria, Botswana, and Kenya. An expert says advancing American business interests outside the U.S. ties in with Trump's America First policy.
From Donald Trump's first term, we saw how he has very proactively been rooting for promoting American business and economic interests across the world, even during
the meeting. So I think spearheaded
it's just continuing with that trend. But of course, Elon Musk being very close to Donald Trump, it raises questions around cronyism or crony capitalism.
That is because in instances where African countries have resisted or delayed licensing Starlink, they've been met with veiled threats.
First of all, funding will be cut to those particular countries. It has happened in South Africa. Another thing is that they are going to receive very short shrift in the United States. They will be pilloried, for example, for their human rights violations and any other excuse at all that Donald Trump might actually find.
South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa experienced this firsthand on a visit to the White House last week. The country had delayed licensing Starlink, citing regulatory compliance. Following the White House visit, the country is now looking to relax conditions that would grant Starlink a license. As a result, Dr. Chitambara is urging African countries to leverage their positions with equity in mind.
Make sure that it's actually a quid pro quo kind of arrangement where they also benefit from trade concessions, from greater investment inflows from American companies into their economies.
But while it may ease pressure on African governments in the short term, there could be repercussions in the long run.
It might happen that we please Trump after 4 years, but in the long run, we allow foreign interests that to have a more durable or a longer consequence on the African continent that will outlive Trump's presidency.
Several African countries, including Gambia, have so far delayed giving Musk's company an operating license, citing regulatory compliance. How much longer they can resist under mounting U.S. government pressure remains to be seen. Robert Nagila, CGTN, Nairobi.
Right, there you have it. That, to move on to the next item in South Africa, is that the scientist innovation in agriculture research can help combat malnutrition. And now that's according to scientists from the African Union Development Agency, now attending the G20 meeting of chief agriculture scientists in Polokwane, Limpopo. Now, scientists have joined policymakers for the annual gathering, and the main aim of the meeting is to deliberate on ways to promote research that can lead to sustainable farming. You might take a listen.
By global scientist says transforming food systems is one of its goals. This means the current chain of producing, processing, and consuming food needs to be modernized to incorporate scientific research. The meeting by chief agricultural scientists is an annual meeting by G20 member nations. This year, through South Africa's G20 presidency, the African Union has brought in its scientists who also form part of the delegation of experts. African Union scientists have found that roughly 60% of arable land in the continent has not been exploited.
What you are bringing to the table as African Union, what you are advancing, is that we discuss, we see good things, we see what has to be done. As we are assured that Africa has 60% of untapped arable land, which is still idle, how can we now partner with G20 members to make sure we bring technologies to exploit this land, to make sure we produce more and we test all the technology we're talking about so that we increase productivity on the African continent.
Scientists and policymakers have to, however, work together to ensure that all their ideas eventually become a reality.
It's quite very important to science be translated into actions and for adoption for the farmers. So it's important to the farmers to have access to knowledge adequate to their reality that can bring them to a better food production without excessive costs on that. Yeah. So this is a big challenge for us as a scientist to translate this into adoption.
The outcomes of this meeting will form part of deliberations at the G20 Leaders Summit in November.
All right. To move on to the next item is that the strides made in international task cooperation, including the impending United Nations task convention and the agreement on the global minimum tax of 15% as a step in the right direction toward a fair global tax regime. Now, that's the world from the International Tax Reform Summit underway in Johannesburg. Now the summit brings together, among its other, the tax expert, activist and civil society organization to engage on tax policy that can help different countries raise revenues and of course support inclusive growth. You might take a lesson.
Together, experts, tax justice activists, labor organizations and policymakers to chart a course for a more equitable and sustainable global tax policies. It's hoped discussions will bring about solutions and international cooperation to combat illicit financial flows and corporate tax evasion, as well as to address rampant global inequality. organizers also hope to be able to contribute to the United Nations Tax Convention, a proposed international agreement aimed at improving international tax policy and cooperation.
The problem that we've had is that the rules that are currently in place have been in place for a very long time. A lot of them were set maybe 100 years ago, a time where most African countries were still colonies. And these rules really don't work to our benefit. A lot of them are based on favoring the countries which export capital, the countries where multinational corporations are based or headquartered. So maybe your European countries, countries like Australia, Canada, they're really the ones who benefit from the current tax rules.
Union Federation SAFTU says the global movement to enforce a minimum 15% tax rate for multinationals aimed at cutting down on tax competition between countries is too low.
We're going to be critiquing the United Nations Commission on Tax, which is proposing a tax regime tagged at 15%. We believe that that 15% is way too low and is yet another gateway for the corporates to continue profiting but making no contribution whatsoever to the development of the African continent, of the global south, and indeed of every other country in the whole world. So that's our main message, that the 15% is way too low. We are battling with the reports from UNTACT that, as well as the African Union, that indicate that actually through illegal means, illicit cash outflows, mispricing, and all of that, corporates are ripping off the African continent.
Delegates said that South Africa's G20 presidency provides a window of opportunity on both the national and international levels to push for a fairer global tax system.
It's important to find a common agenda and a common strategy to advance the progressive tax reform together with all the allies from national organizations, civil society, but also trade unions, and then international organizations like ICRIT that can help complement the work that's done at national level. This year is particularly important for South Africa as it hosts the G20. It's also one of the key countries in the UN negotiation for a framework convention on international tax cooperation, and also a member of the BRICS. So there's a number of fora where the South African government can play a positive role to advance tax reform, both to ensure that multinationals pay their fair share and also that the rich pay their fair share.
The summit coincides with South Africa's ongoing national budget debates following delays due to the rejected value-added tax increase. This saw the fuel levy increased, a move SAFTU says will have the same effect on the poor.
All right, there you had it, dear listeners. The time is 25 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now to move on to the next item, that should also be the last item of the day from the international segment. Now, Rand Water says all it's on track for major infrastructure maintenance, which will begin on Thursday and end next Tuesday. Now, low to no water supply is possible in parts of Gauteng and neighboring provinces. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Major infrastructure work is well calculated ahead of the summer season when the demand surges.
We conduct our maintenance periodically. By periodically, we mean throughout the year, both the financial and the calendar year. We spend close to 400 million per annum as Renota on a yearly basis on repairs and maintenance. What we do is that we conduct our major maintenances through what we call our low demand periods. The first low demand period is the winter months. Generally, the water consumption or usage drops in winter for a number of reasons. The first is obviously households shy away from topping their swimming pools. Secondly, we mostly see that consumers use water to for their loans, the TEFs.
Water supply will be affected across Gauteng, as well as parts of the Free State, Northwest and Mpumalanga.
The impacted areas for this work, extremely important, is going to be the city of Ekurhuleni, the city of Tshwane, and our municipalities in Mpumalanga, Govenbeke, Victor Kanye, and Thembisilehane. We also have smaller direct customers along this system. Obviously, they will be impacted. Ladies and gentlemen, during this 107 hours, we will be switching off pumping of our Mapleton station completely. There will be no pumping from that system when we do this work.
Residents are being urged not to panic, as some areas may still have water during this period.
The recovery process has got its own dynamics depending on impacted areas. Most of the time we hear that even after rainwater would have announced that we have finished our maintenance work, there are still areas that would be without water. And these are mostly high-lying areas wherein we hand over now the baton to the municipality to say, there's now water flowing into your system. Let's manage this water in such a way that we try and fast-track the recovery.
The bulk water utility says systems won't be completely shut down and that tankers will be sent to West affected areas.
All right, there you have it. The time is 29 minutes in the office o'clock, and there's any more news. Keep going, going to a very short commercial break. And once we return, we'll take you through the local news update. Stay tuned.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Get social media with the kiro kabuna I matina omjo. Chika o shafa sana na na longe shifa ya ishiwike moshi wana. Iye moya o ota ingongo tisa mwene. Anage shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seisa nina omayakuro nirandi toma yoe yonge shifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende pime meha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengera selma, konara heta tuimu. Datundatu, heari hamano tano, oni aji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? Even a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
All right, the time is 31 minutes in the half 6 o'clock, and this early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the first update locally, is that the residents of Divundu have raised concerns over the ongoing development project in the area. Now, saying they are not against the progress, they just demand fair and adequate compensation for the land and resources in their region. Now, the community held a demonstration at the Divundu Village Council in the Mukwe constituency yesterday. Now, we understand the importance of development and we welcome it because it brings opportunities and infrastructure infrastructure, that is on Tuesday, but it should not come at the cost of our livelihood, homes and dignity. Now that's what Taporo Marcus, one of the demonstrators, said. Now the demonstration called for the removal of the Divundu Village Council, which residents accuse of failing to compensate those affected by development project. Now, the residents expressed the frustration over inadequate consultation and a lack of transparency from project developers and the council itself. Now, community members claim they were either uninformed about the full scope of the development or offered compensation that does not reflect the true value of their land and property. Now, development should uplift communities, not to displace or marginalize them. That's what Basilius Nakare, one of the community members, said. Now, all we are asking is for fairness, Nakare said. Now, residents are calling on government officials and investors to prioritize community engagement and ensure that the benefit of development are shared equally with the people of Divundu. Now, reading the residents' petition, spokesperson Freddie Marando said the community lost their land without proper consultation or rather compensation. Now, he stated that some people were relocated to unserviced areas lacking basic utilities such as water, electricity, sewage system and roads. Now, he also raised concerns about the man-made oxidation pond situated near residential areas, which emits a full odors and poses health risks. Now, it's emerging into the main river where the community fetches water for domestic use, including drinking, Marando warned. Now, furthermore, Marando claimed that the CEO of the Divundu Village Council is not accessible to the public, making it difficult for residents to raise their concerns or rather seek assistance. Now, some residents say they have been waiting for compensations since 2016. Now, in response to the petition, Mukwa Constituents Councillor Damien Mungambai said compensation has already been paid out by the Divundu Village Council. Now, he noted that records show the team leader of the demonstration is among those who receive payments. Now, Mungambai added that over 100 residents have been compensated between 2017 and 2025, and the process is ongoing. That's what he said. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the traders in the various special controlled products will only be allowed to import 11 of the 20 fresh produce, as local farmers are expected to meet their demand for 9 products in June. Now, this will prompt the border to be closed for importation of the 9 crop listed as special control products from 1st June to 31st June 2025. Now, according to the notice regarding the closure and opening of the borders, it's issued by the Executive Director of the Namibian Economic Board, that is Fredrich Mwanzi, On the 21st May, he said the border will be closed to all types of and sizes of butternut squash, cabbage, green paper, onion, pumpkin, sweet potato, round tomato, lettuce, and spinach. Now, this marks an improvement compared to the previous month, that in February, only 6 crops were restricted from importation. In March, and there were only 8, and in May, the 6 only, that is in June. In May. Now, we spoke to the horticulture manager at the Namibian Economic Board, that is Emily Abraham, just to take us through this particular notice.
Good morning, Ms. Abraham. How are you doing?
I'm doing very fine. Good morning, and good morning to all listeners.
Ms. Abram, I see that the Namibia Economic Board has released its notice regarding open and closed borders for the month of June. Can you briefly explain the importance of the notice and why it is issued every month?
Yes, thank you very much. It's a tradition. The Namibia Agronomic Board released a closed and open border notice, which highlights the types of products that we call special control products, because we have a scheme that we are driving under the market share promotion scheme, where we have identified specific product lines that we saw our local farmers are able to produce in a sufficient quantity at a certain particular time. So that's why you see that those crops, sometimes they can close, sometimes they can open, depending whether they are enough or there is no sufficient volume locally. So what we are looking at is that we monitor the production locally to make sure that whenever we are implementing closed border periods, there is no way where a consumer is going in the on the shop and looking for a certain or specific vegetable and not will not be able to find it. So that's why we say that we do our due diligence first, and from that perspective, it's when we inform which crop should be closed and which crop should be opened. So if we have maybe to look at the importance of this notice, just to say that is to create market access for a Namibian farmer, and also remember our horticulture industry is a baby. We need to grow. And our farmers, they don't have muscle to compete against the competitors from outside the country. And that's why you see that the MSP and Special Control Product Scheme, which is a booster scheme to MSP, was introduced. It was introduced long time, 2005, and so far it has proven to be effective, because if you look at where we started, we used to produce 5% only. In 2005, to date, we are producing 47%. So that is actually commendable. And that's why you see that when we are releasing these notices now, to create awareness to the traders to say, this is the crops that are going to be closed, and start to make local purchase arrangement with our local farmers. And also to again now to highlight which crops that our local farmers are not able to bring on the table, so that they can organize and start to place their orders with their supplier outside the country. So basically, the importance is just to create 100% market access for the local farmer.
Okay. Could you provide more detail about which products are open for import and which are closed?
Yes, I'm happy to walk you through. If you look at now the list for, or the notice for the, for June, which is the next month, it shows actually, a positive light or a greener light, although still you will have a lot of crops that are a bit open. You'll have now 11 crops that are open, some open partially, some open 100%, and then only 9 crops that are closed. So there is a lot of challenges that is triggering this insufficient availability of specific lines. I'm going to highlight maybe specific challenges at the end of later, after I've maybe walk you through on the list of crops that are closed and those that are open, and also open on ProLata. So the closed products are butternuts, cabbage, green peppers, onions, pumpkin, sweet potato, round tomato, lettuce and spinach. Those are the crops that are closed for June month. And the one that are open for June month includes beetroots, carrots, gem squash, potato washed, and watermelon, sweet melon, and sweet corn. Those crops, 7 crops, they can be brought in the country. Anybody can, I mean, the registered traders can bring them in without restrictions. However, we urge them to observe the 47% MSP. What I'm trying to say is that even when a product is open 100%, you as a trader, you have a responsibility to make sure that whatever minimal volume that is available locally, you still need to make effort to purchase that small quantity, so that at the end of the day, you'll be able to qualify for better MSP when we are going to assess you as an individual trader, because we also do assess individual trader to look at individual performance in terms of MSP. So then ProLata, Rolata, those groups that are open partially, we have English cucumber open on 30%, colored pepper open on 30%, and jam tomato and cocktail tomato, both of them, they are open on 20%. What it means is that these crops that are open on 20% or 30%, it means that our local farmers, they are able to bring on the table 70% of what the domestic can actually consume. And then that's why then the 30% that we cannot bring on the table, our traders, they have to take it from somewhere or elsewhere. So that is basically what it means. So it shows that still some crops that are open there more. And I just want to encourage the producers to really pay attention to this notice so that they take advantage of crops that are always open for importation, because that is an opportunity. It shows that we are not producing enough, but then the crop is liked. So that's why the notice is also important, basically, to inform decision-making when it comes to planting or what to plant and what not to plant.
Okay. We've learned this year, farmers across all regions have received excessive rainfall. Why then has watermelon production specifically not met domestic demand along with other crops?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And one thing that we need to take cognizance of is that water is not the only factor of production that a farmer require or a plant require to grow. There are so many things that a plant requires to grow, such as light, such as optimal temperature. Mm. So if those things are not constant, then that is where you see that even when you have enough water to irrigate and you have enough fertilizer to feed your crop, still there are those stressors, we call them abiotic and biotic stress factors, that can impact the production. In this case now we have weather challenges, such as, for example, frost. We just actually received the news from one farmer who experienced the heavy frost on his green peppers, for example. So what we are trying to say is that the weather is too cold, especially for June. It's a cold weather or it's winter, and sometimes we experience frost in some areas, and hence frost actually damage crops, such that you see that some of the product lines will not be able to be available. Mm. And also remember also that even when there is enough water, although we will benefit, or vegetable farmers will benefit indirectly, because then the aquifer will also be recharged, and also the farmers will have enough water to irrigate, but the people or the farmers that will benefit directly are those farmers that are growing, for example, your grains or maize under rain-fed. Those ones will be able to see that they will benefit more as compared to the vegetable ones. Because for vegetable, whether there is no rain or there is rain, the source of water is irrigation. And you find that even when there is heavy rainfall, sometimes also we have challenge such that their field will be basically flooded and they won't be able to harvest. Such that the time now the field is dry up, when they are going to harvest their crops, they are rotten. So it actually, heavy rainfall has its own advantage and disadvantages, particularly for a vegetable farmer. Mm-hmm. And hence you see that now the reflection on the closed and open borders, where you see that we are still struggling to have sufficient availability of specific product lines.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it for having us this morning, and please continue doing a great job. You may have a blessed day ahead. Thank you.
Right there you had it. The time is 46 minutes in the off 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, additionally, farmer Anso Nyipewa noted that certain crops might not be cultivated sufficiently due to various in consumer preferences. Now, he said in the community of Okongo, they don't really grow what the customers don't want. However, they ensure the produce according to their preferences. So we might take a listen to what he has to say more on this.
We produce those crops, they have season of, like, they have season.
Okay.
They are season for planting sweet corn, watermelon, and sweet melon, as you mentioned today. You cannot produce them throughout the year because we have season of the year. There are certain seasons that they will not allow those crops to survive. Yeah, but about the watermelon, for us at this side, we produce according to the demand, and we know watermelon is it's in demand.
Okay.
But watermelon, it doesn't like that too much water. That is why, luckily enough, we cannot produce them during the rain season. Yes, and we have a different variety, and those variety that are needed in the commercial demand, they cannot survive. But those one that those normal watermelon that used to produce in our field there, those one they can survive, but we have a different variety. It depends on the variety of watermelon that you want to plant. The same I try to sweet melon, they don't like too much water. That is why you used to produce them like during spring.
Okay.
And autumn there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is the case. And about the carrot. Yeah, carrot, they can survive also, but they don't like that too much water. That is why, like, making a business in agriculture, we can make it worldwide. Because we have a different weather focus at the different, like, countries or the different, like, region. That is why you have a certain region that you can produce watermelon currently, but you're just going through. But right, for us at Ohanguna, you cannot do that. Because we have experiencing that fraud. So if it happened to come, you will cry forever. And the problem again, about producing enough in our country, we can. But the problem is the lack of resources. We don't have resources.
Which sort of resources are you speaking about, Mr. Assel?
Like, you know, it requires a lot for you to produce a quality product for the commercial. Because you need enough fertilizer, you need the pesticide, you need the drip irrigation, you need, it's a lot.
Okay.
And that is now, as we are just producing according to the capital we have. But if we're having someone to help us, if the government like was meeting us halfway, then we can thrive. And but the problem is we are just doing it on our own, but it's not, yeah, we are not blaming the government. Maybe they will come. We are hoping that one day they will reach us. And but for now we are able to produce to that level.
Now, Mr. Assel, what types of produce are you currently cultivating, and maybe why have you chosen those?
Currently, I only have onions, because onions, they can survive well in the winter season.
All right.
I was having sweet corn that you mentioned today. I was having it. But unfortunately, I wasn't having it in large quantity due to that lack of resources, as I mentioned earlier. And, I managed to, like, to harvest beautiful and sweet corn.
Okay.
And the demand is, it was too high. So, we are hoping that one day we will be there. And I was planning to plant cabbages also, but I don't have enough, because I'm planning to, on July, we are going to plant watermelon and butternut.
Okay.
So if I plant cabbages now, I cannot going to plant enough butternut and enough watermelon.
Why so?
but of course the resources are limited. And to the farmers be motivated that that's the law of farming. You have to lose, you have to win, and let's just keep focus.
Okay.
And I have a strong hope that one day Namibia will be green as we are dreaming. Those are my final words.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Aso, for having you.
Thank you very much.
All right. To move on to the next item is that in celebration of Africa Day, it's vital to acknowledge the significant impact entrepreneurs have in shaping the continent's economy landscape. Now, entrepreneurs are not merely business owners. They are key drivers of innovation, job creation, and sustainable development. Now, with that in mind, we had a conversation with entrepreneur Jafeti Siteketa, who shared his thoughts on the types of businesses and strategies necessary for the African's advancement. We might take a listen.
Yes, Mr. Jafeti, very good morning to you, or good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you, Mr. Rafi.
Yes, welcome to Eagle FM.
Thank you. I'm glad that you have me on your channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yesterday we celebrated the African Day, which is actually now 62 years of celebrating this day. But one of the things the observation or the status quo is that Africa is not at the level where we want it to be. And from us as an economic and entrepreneur oriented radio, we are now trying to talk to entrepreneurs that what is that that needed to be done, especially from the entrepreneurial space, to take Africa where it needs to be in terms of creating employment and creating wealth for ourselves. What is that needs to be done by the entrepreneurs? You as an entrepreneur yourself, if you can perhaps just give us your view, what do entrepreneurs need to do to take Africa to the level where it's supposed to be?
Thank you very much. I think the first aspect of what an entrepreneur should do is to understand that you cannot function in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
You do require, you know, other business entities to support your business ideologies.
Mm-hmm.
And within that space, that means you need to, of course, team up with other entrepreneurs in aspects where your business requires assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Or where you need to share skills and ideas to be able to develop to a better, you know, business ideology.
Uh-huh.
If I may just maybe probe on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Usually what happens is that we tend to treat our businesses as small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
We normally don't have, you don't want to grow your idea to become a bigger business. And as a consequence, we become too satisfied with the level of our entrepreneurship when we just achieve a little, you know, progress we think we have achieved our aims.
Mm.
We don't set higher aims where we want to compete nationally, where we want to compete continentally, where we want to compete internationally.
Mm.
And because of that satisfaction,
we
don't want to grow beyond, you know, the levels that you have grown to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for me is one of the biggest, you know, setbacks where we as entrepreneurs always think we have made it, but we, because our aims are, we don't aspire to grow beyond, a national level, for example, or regional levels.
Mm-hmm. Now, we know that yes, entrepreneurs need a conducive environment, an ecosystem need to be created for them to flourish or to grow. Maybe one of the questions that we also have, you as an entrepreneur yourself on the eastern side of the country, or Kavango West or Kavango East, or beyond that, maybe what do you think is required from our political leadership? We can either talk at the local level, at the regional level, national, or even in the rest of the African country. What do we need from our political leadership for you as an entrepreneurship to do what needs to be done?
Yeah, first and foremost, I think I need to admit that in Namibia especially, we do have the necessary legal frameworks that support our businesses. Mm-hmm. We can start from the constitution.
Mm-hmm.
We can start from the organization of our businesses. We do have that.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is the NCCI that we have.
Mm-hmm.
It's so well organized from, you know, branch levels to mm-hmm. regional levels to national levels.
Mm-hmm.
Which is supposed to be the vehicle that is supposed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of conducive environment, I think we do have.
Mm-hmm.
But where we are failing is, mm-hmm. despite the conducive environment,
mm-hmm.
there is a very, very important aspect that needs to actually help our our businesses to thrive,
mm-hmm.
which is the financial aspect of it. Because
mm-hmm.
I could have a very good, you know, business idea,
mm-hmm.
which can actually flourish.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't have the financial know-how to be able to finance this idea, it will not be able to achieve its plan, irrespective of the fact that we do have a very good business idea.
Mm.
So the financial part, I think, is where we are lacking most as businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you have how good an idea that you would want to grow,
mm.
when you reach at the financial aspect, we usually fail.
Mm-hmm.
And other is that, the skills that we have.
Mm.
Sometimes we need to obviously have, you know, trainings. We need to have, entrepreneurship in the same spaces that
mm.
can help us grow and achieve our aims.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in terms of the actual environment itself, I think our government has established it
mm.
from the legal and law perspective. We can,
mm.
but then we are restricted
mm.
by the fact that we do not have the necessary financial, you know, support
Mm.
that is supposed to assist us as businesses to grow further.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that is where we can have I have a follow-up question on that. Oh, so do you think perhaps now, can we establish, because we had SACCO, but if you look within Africa, we never had even a continental entrepreneur-oriented type of bank. The African Development Bank that we have, it mostly just lended to government. But even in SADC itself, even within SACCO, we don't really have a bank which is catering for entrepreneur. And also, since now we have a lot of small, medium enterprises, do you think perhaps we need to revive a government-backed type of SME bank again? So for us to cater for the financial support that you're asking for. Or what is your view? What can the continent or what can we do at the country level to unlock the potential of entrepreneur through financial support?
Most definitely.
Mm.
I think, you know, starting from the African Development Bank.
Mm.
If you look at the African Development Bank, it is focusing on financing our governments.
Mm.
But governments, they are, of course, independent organizations that run countries. They are not, entrepreneurship as per se in terms of what the financing is aimed at.
Mm.
They are there to develop governments, business ideas.
Mm.
But what we require in Africa is to be able to finance
mm.
the most local of businesses.
Mm.
If we don't finance the smaller businesses,
mm.
employment itself being the biggest challenge that we have.
Mm.
Governments alone cannot employ everybody.
Mm.
But the moment we start financing small businesses, they start employing people at local level. They start employing people at regional level. They start employing people at national level. That is when we really address
mm.
the aspect of unemployment within a country.
Mm.
But because our financing do not reach those levels,
mm.
at the current moment, the financing is only at continental, if I can put it that way, because it's only financing
mm.
our government.
Mm.
But within the governments, we need to come up with, financial portfolios that are financing
mm.
businesses within countries, that are financing businesses within regions, that are financing businesses within, you know, smaller aspects. That is when
mm.
we become self-independent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also now, perhaps, so Africa is known for just sending raw material. And as we keep celebrating the African Day, maybe what is your view again? What do you entrepreneurs need to start adding value? I'm looking at, we were like last week in Kavango West. I'm looking at the potential. I'm looking at the forest. I'm looking at the wildlife. I'm looking at so much that actually entrepreneurs can do to avoid just sending the wood to China for chairs and things. what, as we keep celebrating this day, how do we unlock value addition? What you as an entrepreneur from Kavango West or Kavango East or from Zambezi, what do you need for value addition to make sure that Africa does not send raw material outside anymore?
I think our stand as you know, business people within Kavango West, we were looking at, we need to start adding value to our natural resources. We want to start from the smallest levels and then maybe grow it to also national. I honestly want to support African governments that have now realized that, you know, resources within Africa need to be utilized by Africans. We cannot keep on exporting raw materials outside. You know, prior to this, I was speaking to about you know, creating job opportunities. We cannot create job opportunities if we are only at the primary level of industries where we extract raw materials and we export them. Then the second level of job creation, where processing is done outside. The third level where manufacturing is done outside. Then we only consume the finished products, and then we are saying, these are very products produced from African resources, but we were not part and parcel of, you know, the processing industry. We're not part and parcel of the manufacturing industry. We are only at the beginning where we are, you know, extracting. Then we are at the end at consumption. Then we will not grow any businesses at all. That is why we believe that we need to start adding value from our resources, from production level, from, you know, processing level, from manufacturing level, and then consumption. If we leave out these two very important aspects of, you know, processing and then the last aspect of you know, of production, we cannot add value to our resources. We will remain consumers of resources that we have, but then we do not, we miss out the most two important aspects. So for Kavango, therefore, if one thing that we focus on as business, you know, people within the region is that, why don't we start by showing that we do have the water, we do have the land, we do have the wood, as you have said. Why don't we start adding value from those aspects? Maybe we could be, you know, an example to others to emulate. So we will see how that goes. But I just hope that, you know, the aspect of financing will not stand in our way. But I think the environment is there. It has been created. If nationally we can also start thinking in that direction, it will honestly add value. Because I don't want to see an Africa that is rife to unemployment. We can address those issues of unemployment. We need to address the issues of processing our own material. We need to address the issues of manufacturing, you know, products from our own raw materials. Only then will we truly address, you know, the aspect of our entrepreneurship.
Mr. Jaffet, thank you so much for making time. And I think we will be reaching out more often, because here at Eagle FM, we are discussing entrepreneur-related matters and how we can unlock the potential that we keep talking about of our country. And given the reach that your region has, Kavango West and Kavango East has, I think we can, the entrepreneurs can do more. And, Eagle FM is here actually to facilitate such a type of conversation when it comes to entrepreneurship and policy making. So thank you so much for making time for us.
No, I appreciate it, Rastas. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right.
Okay, bye.
There you had it. The secretary just emphasized the importance of collaboration amongst entrepreneurs, and of course highlighting that their success often requires support from various business entities. Now we might take a listen to the, we also just went into a conversation with a researcher, Edward Philippos, just to dive deep into the significance of Africa Day. We might take a listen.
So as we are continue proceeding with our early morning scoop, so today we are going to look at the tracking progress in 62 African Day anniversary. So the African Day holds significant importance for African as it commemorates the founding of the Organization of African Unity, what we call OAU, on the 25th of May 1963 in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, which aimed to promote unity and solidarity among African nations. So they're saying that Africa celebrated 62-day anniversary after the history-long transformation through colonial and post-colonial time So today we're going to look back at Africa as a continent and how it's changed in economic and human development, especially where is the continent in terms of trade, food security, health, and he's also a researcher assistant at the city of Windhoek. Good morning, Edward, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for hosting me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Edward, can you maybe tell us how did the continent develop for the past 62 years?
When you are looking at the African Unions or Africa as a continent, the organization was formed in 1963 by founding members as they were trying to make sure Africa was united, and then there was also solidarity, especially with the African countries that were fighting colonialism at the times. Mm-hmm. So the organizations achieved its aim at the time of making sure that every African country was independent, and then they would be able to develop and do all those things. Mm-hmm. So over the years, the continent experienced some challenges and they overcame them. We had challenges like peace and security. Yes, we still have it in some countries like the DRCs, and we also have some terrorism in countries like Nigeria. And then you can also look at countries like in the Sahel region. Mm-hmm. We still experience some problems there, but when it comes to peace and security. But the continent has also done well when you look at maybe economic development, human resource, and also when it comes to continental integration. In I think in 2021, the AU managed to come up with the African Continental Free Trade Area, mm-hmm. the body that's trying to unite African economies so African countries can trade together, or because once you are united, then your economies can become strong, and then also to make trade easy between African countries. So we have made some strides here and there, but yeah, we still have a long way to go as African.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so can you maybe tell us what is the theme of the African Day celebrations, or why is May 25th, 1963 referred to as African Day?
I think the day is important because it's a reminder of where we came from as a continent, of the challenges that we experienced in the past, and also just to remind every African person of what is the main visions of the AAU. Because back then we wanted to achieve independence, political independence. Mm-hmm. And then we have achieved it to an extent, and now we also need to make sure that we are able to develop as a continent, to make sure that we have peace on every corner of the continent, to make sure that our peoples are not in poverty. And for you to do that, you need to remember why our forefathers formed the AAU. And then, so we can just also like re-energize yourself, like, okay, you need to put more efforts and make sure that we achieve the dreams of making sure that Africa is not considered as a developing continent, but also to play a major role when it comes to world politics, to also make sure that our peoples are developed and also on the same stage as other continents.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So what are some of the noted economic and technological changes in Africa, Edward?
When it comes to economic changes, we are not doing that well when it comes to economic changes, because when you are looking at our trade partners, we don't normally trade with each other as African countries. Mm-hmm. We normally trade with the US, EU, and China. So there is a gap there that needs to be filled. And I think the free continental trade area, if we put more efforts and there is political will, mm-hmm. we can do much better, as and it can improve our economies, because now we are going to trade as one economies and not like how we are divided anymore, because I think our population is like, once we put it together, it's like 1.3 billion. And then once you bring it up together, then it's going to be a big thing. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to technology, we are also not doing well compared to other countries. We are still like a baby that's trying to get up there. So, and we have a long way to go. So, and considering that we are a continent that has one of the youngest populations in the world, so I think Africans just need to make sure to empower their young peoples, and it's because young peoples are the one that drive changes. They are the one that drives our development. So we just need to make sure that we invest in our young people so they can come up with those good innovations, and they invest in our agriculture, healthy, and all other things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so my last question is that dream of United Africa soon to be reached, or what are the challenges, or what do you think about this?
When you are looking at the challenges or the dream of United Africa, it's a big dream of making sure that Africa is united. But it also, you also need to ask yourself, like, if it's to be united, let's say one country, like the dreams of Muammar Gaddafi that he had of us to be considered as one country. But now I think there is not much effort from our leaders, because now they are talking about Agenda 2063. Mm-hmm. Maybe we are going to see once we get there. But I think with the initiatives that are happening now, we have the African Free Continental Free Trade Area. Mm-hmm. So that can be considered as Africa being united. Mm-hmm. And also maybe for us also to reach that dream, maybe we can also look at our regional bodies like SADC. Maybe we also need to start there. Mm-hmm. Namibia and Botswana, I think in recent years, we are able to go to each other's country just using your ID. So if maybe other African countries can also do the same. So I think it can be realized, but it takes more efforts, and they need more political backing from every African countries need to have the same dream that we must become one. Mm-hmm. As a continent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you so much, Edward Philippos, for being with us on the Early Morning Scoop, and I would like to say have a blessed day ahead.
Okay, thank you, and likewise.
Thank you.
All right, there you had it. The time is 14 minutes in the after 7 o'clock, and this Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the Foreign Direct Investment, FDI, report revealed significant insight. Now, FDI refers to an investment made by a person or company in one country in business interest in another country. Now, it often involves acquiring a substation, in foreign enterprises or outright purchases to expand operations into new regions. Now, over recent years, a profit limited by foreign companies have surged, highlighting the extractive nature of the industry. Profit rose dramatically from $1.2 billion in 2020 to $9.3 billion in 2024. Now, despite employing 15,653 individuals, now the mining sector absorbed 67.7% of the FDI stock. Now, my colleague Sharon spoke with economic Jason Kasuto to explore how Namibia can attract FDI linked into its natural resources, and how local citizens can leverage those investments to build their own industries. We might take a listen.
So as we are continue proceeding with our Early Morning Scoop, so today we are going to look on So as you all know, that according to the foreign direct investment report, what we call FDI, so the profits taken by foreign companies and interest paid have increased and exposed how the industry is attractive in its nature. So profit repatriations have soared over 5 years, with dividends alone climbing from 1.2 billion in 2020 to 9.3 billion in 2024. So key sectors driving the outflow of money, including diamonds and gold mining firms, grappling with global demands, shifts and competition from lab-grown gems. So repatriated 30.9% of total dividends. So the mining sector employed just 15,653 employees, even when it's absorbing 67.7% of FDI stock. So today we are going to engage with one of the economists, Mr. Jason Kasuto. So good morning, Jason Kasuto, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning.
Okay, I'm very well. So Jason Kasuto, can I ask this question? Like, what is the cause of Namibia getting foreign direct investment on its natural resources, and however, it ends up being taken by foreign companies without benefiting the majority of Namibians? What do you think about this?
Right. Thank you, Benedict, and good morning to you and the listeners. Namibia, has got very strong natural resource in diamonds, endowments, which means deposits, especially with our natural resources across minerals. Mm-hmm. So Namibia has been a very attractive destination to a lot of mining interests. What we obviously see is that these mining interests are largely foreign mining interests that would like to acquire license, operate, and then extract the mineral resources. So the figures are just showing how that is happening in reality, that we are attracting quite a large number of that and extracting quite a large volume of our resources. Mm-hmm. In terms of the beneficiation or benefiting, of course, the benefit would be limited for Namibia, and especially because we probably do not have the local content policies that are strong enough to be able to ensure that we have got strong participation of local Namibians, SMEs, and businesses in the value chain procurement of these mining operators. Mm-hmm. And also, obviously, limited participation from our state-owned mining company, Bangelo, mm-hmm. in the ownership of these mines, mm-hmm. or either any other Namibian or state-owned entity. So at an ownership level, the distribution of ownership is skewed, and then obviously also at a procurement, what I mean for the benefit of some of the listeners, what I mean by that is just the amount of money the mining companies are spending for goods and services in our local economy. Does it really end up being provided by local Namibian companies so as to ensure mm-hmm. that the money flows and circulates for the benefit of Namibians within our local economy? And there lies also a challenge.
Mm-hmm. So another question is that, so the mining industry is noted to be the huge attractor of FDI, but contributed less to employment rate in Namibia. So what might be the cause of this, Kasuto?
Yeah, the mining industry over the years has grown in its efficiencies. What I mean by that is that more technology equipment has replaced human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So where you had a mine in the past employing 10,000 people, it's now employing 1,000 people. So more technology, more equipment, which results in for the mine, more efficiencies, means that we are reducing the number of people who are required at an operational, level. Mm-hmm. So the employment figures, are what they are. That's one. Also bearing in mind that because we are just still in the extractive phase and not doing any value addition to our minerals locally, and I must really also admit that I cannot say to any. I think in the diamond sector, there are cutting and polishing companies and so on. So one must take cognizance of that. But in totality, as a sector, there's very limited value addition taking place. Value addition, which would then be categorized as manufacturing of sorts, would have been able to increase the absorption of employment or increase more jobs being done. So mm-hmm. So yes, your operations extracting is becoming more efficient, therefore less employment.
Mm-hmm.
But the real focus should now then be on how do we add value to the resource in order to be able to create more jobs, mm-hmm. increase then the local economic activity from the sector.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So I would like to ask this question. So as we all know that, like FDI is an international investment where an entity from one country invests in a company or business in another country with the goal of exercising significant control over that business. So maybe can you maybe tell us some advantages of FDIs?
No, the FDI is very important because it allows us also to, you know, mm-hmm. where we need as a country where we need larger
mm-hmm.
Pools of capital, which is just money, where mm-hmm. we need in areas where we don't have locally the enough investment or capital or money, so that everyone understands what I'm also saying,
mm-hmm.
It's important to supplement that with foreign direct investment, as we call it. And foreign direct investment also allows Namibia to be able to keep foreign currency, mm-hmm. which is also very important for us to hold foreign currency. So foreign direct investment is a very positive thing for a country, especially Namibia, any nation, in fact, in the world. It just must be able to, when we talk about FDI,
mm-hmm.
we must also measure how productive that FDI has been. Has the FDI gone into the productive areas of our economy for the benefit of our people?
Mm-hmm.
So we need to have a link between that can clearly be demonstrated between FDI creating jobs, improving the standard of living of Namibians, and also stimulating our small to medium enterprises in participating in the value chain, in the transfer of skills and knowledge, so that we too as Namibian businesses are able to also stand on our own at some point. So that's very key.
Mm-hmm.
FDI remains important if it is stimulating those key factors.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, maybe in your own opinions, Jason, can you maybe tell us how can Namibians benefit from FDI and build their own industries?
So Namibians can benefit from FDI if the partnerships are based on, are based on mutually beneficial arrangement. Okay. So, at a partnership level, the FDI should be able to take on local content. right, to say that we would like to partner with Namibians because we are operating in Namibia. Secondly, we would like to be able to transfer skills and knowledge to Namibians so that they are able to also form part of not only the workforce at a very high level, but also be able to understand the technology that is being applied. We would like to partner with Namibians so that Namibian businesses participate in the value chain of this FDI. So that's where, you know, the premise is really on creating partnerships that are win-win. And Namibia too, obviously, from a policy perspective, provide certainty to foreign entities in terms of our stability, in terms of protection of various rights and obligations that we have as a state, and making Namibia increasing the ease of doing business in Namibia, and making it an environment that embraces business, but equally that stands for ensuring that its people, its businesses are standing to benefit as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. So thank you so much, Jason Kashito, for giving us more information or more details on this. I would like to say have a blessed day ahead.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right, there you had it. The time is 28 minutes in the hour, 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. And right now, just lastly, before we close over to my colleague, Tete Makoshori, is that I want to read one of the articles again in our today's newspaper, that is the Village newspaper. Please do not forget to rather follow us or subscribe to get the newspaper. It can be through our channel, that is Eagle FM Media House, or rather you can send your details to 081-241-44, and then you can able to catch up with the newspaper every day's release. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Now, to move on is that the Namibian president, Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, embarked on a diplomatic tour across southern Africa, visiting Angola, Botswana, Zambia, Mozambique, and Tanzania in May 2025. Now, according to analysts, the tour underscored her commitment to deepening regional ties within the Southern African Development Community, that is SADC, and advancing economic cooperation through joint infrastructure program, trade facilitation, and energy partnership. Now, her inaugural foreign visit to Angola is classified as symbolic as it honors historic reparation ties and aim to boost cooperation in agriculture, trade, and oil and gas sectors. Now, subsequent visit to Botswana and Zambia focused on enhancing relations with a discussion on job creation, upgrading border post and also transport corridors such as the Trans-Kalahari and Trans-Kunene roads. Now, during her visit to Mozambique, talks between the two presidents emphasized trade, youth development, and energy cooperation, including a visit to Maputo Thermal Power Plant. Now, that's what we're getting there, and the time is 30 minutes in the hour, 7 o'clock, and that marks our last update of the day. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I wish you luck, and I wish you to listen also to all the program ahead of the day. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of the day. And from me, Lois Ashimi, it's a good bye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the R.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved IMBA that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on IMBA app are the Elsi Nehangano, Dio Sherero o Maimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of IMBA hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover IMBA today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha utekirwa kaguna ii matina omjo. Shikawa shafa sana nana longe shifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongoti samwene. Anangeshefa ya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randitoma yoe, yongeshefa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende pimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashipareki uimopo yomo programa betu. Moambo, dengira selma, konara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniaj. Eagle FM, go aya.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Either a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.